The following podcast is brought to you by Crosswinds Golf and Country Club in Burlington, Ontario. I've been telling you for years, decades, forget years, that Crosswinds offers the best value in public golf in all of Ontario. Their 18-hole championship golf course is exquisite. They have million-dollar views, and there is a commitment to excellence by the staff and the ownership there that's second to none. But there's so much more at Crosswinds, not just gorgeous golf, but hey, if you're looking to book a wedding or a special event in 2021 or beyond, get in touch with them. They've got you covered with outstanding banquet facilities, delicious food, sensational service. It's all eventually going to come back. You know that. The golf, though, and like I get in while the getting's good because it's getting late in the season. Book your tee time now online at crosswindsgolf.com and tell them Hebsy sent you. Now, let's start the podcast. We don't give this music enough. You know, this is a great song. This is called Do the Murray by Los Lobos. My buddies. They never played in concert, though.
It's an exclusive for Hebsy on Sports.
Welcome to Hebsy on Sports. It's episode number 208. I'm your host, Mark Hebscher. My friends, they'll call me Hebsy. And I'm having I have fewer and fewer friends. They're either dying or they're retiring or lost their jobs. I don't get to talk to them as much anymore.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's too bad. But you're my friend. This is Toronto Mike in the big studio in New Toronto, the mothership. His friends, by the way, call him Toronto Mike. It's the funniest thing. nobody knows his name. today on the show, it's the 27th anniversary of the most dramatic moment in Toronto sports history. The most dramatic moment in Toronto sports history. Hey, look, Kawhi was awesome. It was. But if you were there, if you were part of that, they drew 4 million fans that year for the first time ever in the history of Major League Baseball, an American game, 4 million fans. We're going to relive it shortly. The World Series continues in, where the heck are they? Texas, Arlington, Texas. That's right. That's right. And it's the, who's playing again? The Tampa Bay Lightning and the LA Kings.
LA Lakers, I think.
Right. That's right. The Lakers. Clippers. I can't keep up. Rays and Dodgers are going to do battle tied at one game apiece. Yesterday was the off day. I didn't know what to do. The NHL has postponed its Winter Classic and the All-Star Weekend because they want to stuff 82 games into a schedule from January to July.
Ooh.
Crazy, man. NHL, man. You know, I don't know. So, you know, they're... I don't know. January 1st. They're going to start January 1st? We'll see. Do you want to hear more women hosting sports radio shows? Are you the type that if you hear a female voice, it doesn't matter to you as long as what the person's saying is interesting or provocative or entertaining or they're knowledgeable about it? Does it really matter? Is it the voice? Is it the sound of the voice that some people just... Or is it you? Is the problem with you, maybe?
Right.
I don't know. We're going to chime in on this topic. Todd Bertuzzi apologizes to members of the media, all except for two guys that he calls cowards. He apologizes for all his years of abusing the media, but not for two particular guys. Can you guess the two guys that Todd Bertuzzi called cowards? Cowards. Tennis news, lots of golf talk, and Wayne Gretzky. Did you know this is a real estate mogul?
I did not know that.
Tell you all about it, but first, happy anniversary, Toronto Blue Jays fans around the world. Mike, roll the clip.
Joe has had his moments. Two balls and two strikes on him. Here's a pitch on the way, a swing and a belt. Left field, way back. Blue Jays win it. The Blue Jays are World Series champions as Joe Carter hits a three-run home run in the ninth inning, and the Blue Jays have repeated as World Series champions. Touch them all, Joe. You'll never hit a bigger home run in your life.
Me too.
Oh, man, I could just listen to the crowd. Are you kidding me? What a call.
I was among the group of the first group of Toronto Blue Jays fans.
Well, then I forgot you're on the same pod. Hold on. Stand by here. All right. Sorry, Hebsy. Continue there.
Sorry. I was part of the first wave of Toronto Blue Jay fans. I was there when they were born.
My 77.
Dad had season's tickets from the beginning. hellished over that team in the beginning. We wanted a team so badly. We were going to get the San Francisco Giants, and then and then Paul Godfrey's. That Paul Godfrey's timing was Paul Godfrey was great. Don't get me wrong, he was great, but his timing was good too. He, you know what I mean? He rode a good little wave there. It worked well. It worked out well for Paul Godfrey. Not taking anything away from the guy. The guy, you know, he really fought for baseball in Toronto. He did. He was the number one baseball fan. I mean, had he not been a baseball fan. Mm. He was Metro chairman. I mean, this is a whole political thing, but I mean, anyway, right on. Beautiful thing. That was 1993, Mike.
Now, Hebsy,
that hadn't happened since 1960. Okay. Where there was a walk-off home run and hasn't happened since a walk-off home run to win the World Series, to win the World Series. Right. So is there an equivalent? Would there be an equivalent of that in hockey, for example?
Well, we've seen overtime, you know,
breakaway
game seven
in overtime.
Goals. Yeah, there's no equivalent.
Really can't. The moment of pitcher versus hitter, and if I strike you out, we still have a chance. But if you hit a home, if you get a hit off of me, that's it.
Yeah,
it's over.
There's no equivalent.
And then to add the dramatics of the fact that it was a 3-run homer. It wasn't a single up the middle. It wasn't a double off the wall. It was a home run.
So, Hebsy, is it fair to say that is the one single most dramatic and exciting play in Toronto professional sports history?
I think if you're of a certain age and you witnessed it, I think if you watched it on YouTube and you weren't there, it's different, man. Listen, I mean,
what would beat it?
If you were there for Bautista's bat flip, okay?
But
forget about the significance of the game. It's what happened leading up to it. It was the
sure,
drama.
Sure, but ALDS.
People throwing full cans of beer on babies? Like, think about that whole.
Yeah, but two things. One inning. Is it's not a walk-off. Secondly, it's a seventh inning. And secondly, it's an ALDS. It's not a World Series.
But the thing is that that means that if you ask people that question, they would have to really sit and think about it. And we don't normally do that. If we were there, we go, oh no, that was the greatest. You know, it's just a little more difficult, but
right.
That home run by Carter in Toronto at SkyDome. And then remember that place had been filled, filled to the brim for like 2 years running, 3 years running, 4 million fans.
Yeah.
Unheard of. You could not get a ticket to those games. It was the place to be seen. Okay, it was rocking every single night. Anyway, and now there's the 2020 World Series, ladies and gentlemen. And if the Blue Jays were in the 2020 World Series, we'd be all going nuts in Canada. But you can't go. Can't go to the games. Can't tailgate in the parking lot. Can't congregate. Can't do any of that. So it would be great, no doubt. But, all of us would kind of be going, not like it was in 93. We got to, not like it was in 2015 or 16, the playoffs. The whole city's got to get into it, and we can't.
Yeah, well, not like it was.
The country's got to get into it.
Not like it was in 2019 with the Raptors. Like, we're very,
that's right.
Not very far removed from exactly right. What you're describing.
If the Raptors had made it to the final this year, it would be great to watch on TV, but it just wouldn't be, of course,
right.
Not. So maybe better that none of us want it this year, in this year of the pandemic.
Hebsy, I find it interesting, quickly, since we're on the Carter home run. You pulled the clip. I'm glad you pulled that clip. That is the definitive Tom Cheek call. But none of us heard that call, right? None of us. We all watched on television. And what was his name again? Mick. Who's the
Ron
Irish?
McDonough.
Right. That's the call we heard live.
The
Irish guy. I couldn't remember his name, but it was the Irish name. Anyway, it's just interesting. We all go to the call that none of us heard because that's the call we all know and love, even though we didn't hear that when we saw the play.
Well, did you ever hear Bob Cole's call of Paul Henderson's goal from the 72 series?
I've heard it, yes.
On CBC Radio?
Yes.
On CBC Radio?
Yes, I have heard it, yes.
So, yeah, the fact that, I mean, see, this didn't exist for many years. There was the singular call. It was, the Russ Hodges, the Giants win the pennant. There's all these calls, and I'm talking radio.
Right.
To me, the television call doesn't work. It doesn't work if you compare it to the radio call. If you had duplicates of each great play that there ever was, for example, like Joe Buck, 7-day for Mark McGwire's 70th home run.
Right.
7-day. But remember, he's watching it as everyone else is. The guy on radio isn't going, crack of the bat. 7-day. He's not. He's going, there's a deep drive. Like, it was like that.
Right.
And so, yeah. And remember, I mean, I'm a radio guy from way back. I mean, radio, and you have to be able to create with sound, a visual for the listener. And on television, it's exactly the opposite. I could turn the sound down on the TV.
Right.
and chat with my friends, or maybe have it on low. But I'm not listening to every word that Joe Buck is saying on television. And I'm not listening to every, I'm getting a little snippet of it. But on radio, I'm compelled. I can't see what's going on. I need that description. I need that mixed in with the sound. And that's why the sound engineers, the audio directors on these televised broadcasts, and I'm talking soccer, baseball, football, hockey, all of it, basketball, and these guys are geniuses. Geniuses, because sometimes I don't know if I'm listening to the actual sound of 11,000 people in the stadium, as is it mixed in with this other audio. It's beautiful. It's right. So different.
Right.
Dodgers in Tampa. Walker Buehler. Buehler? And Tampa's Charlie Morton going against each other. Big pitching matchup there. Series tied 1-1. Not getting a lot of eyeballs watching on TV. Mike, the World Series drew a record low audience on Wednesday for the second straight night. Tampa won 6-4 over the Dodgers. An average of 8.9 million viewers on Fox. That's a 5 rating and an 11 share. Not good. Now, I don't have the numbers in Canada. I haven't been looking for them, I'll be honest with you. I've got other things on my mind. It's not important to me because it doesn't, I can't compare them anyway. It's not that big a deal. I can tell you that they're not great. You know, I'm sure Rogers Sportsnet would, I don't know, like a better matchup or whatever it was.
No, but as we discussed, for some reason during this pandemic, except for maybe the exception of the NFL, which seems to be holding a bit of its own, but everything else seems to be down, right? We talked about that. They're all down. NHL, NBA, yep. US Open.
Netflix is down. Netflix expected. I thought it was like another 2 million subscribers, 2.3 million. They only got 2.1 million subscribers. They figured pandemic people are going to subscribe to Netflix.
Yeah, interesting. Maybe in the winter they'll hunker down again. I don't know.
Who knows? And so the numbers haven't been good. You know, even on the telecast, like Sportsnet has the international feed. So that's Buck Martinez and Matt Vasgersian. And they're in, I believe they're in the studios of Major League Baseball Productions in New Jersey. Kind of like Buck and Dan were for the Blue Jay games, right?
Right.
Joe Buck is at the game with John Smoltz. They've got a plastic divider between them and they're at the game, right? So the main crew there is for sure at the game, but I don't think Vasgersian and Buck are at the game. Let's put it this way. If they were, they would have a camera to show them physically there. That's what you do. That's that reporter on the scene. How do we know you were there? Here's a picture of me here.
For sure.
You got to have that. And you can't play with CGI with that. You can't fake that stuff like that.
Which telecast are you watching, Hebsy? Are you watching Fox or are you watching Sportsnet?
I'm watching Fox.
Yeah, I'm watching Fox too.
So. I'm watching Fox because I think I'm getting the natural sound from Fox. I know, and like I say, I know that those guys are there, and I'm pretty sure Matt and Buck aren't, even though Matt and Buck are doing a fine job. Great job. It's a personal thing too, but I happen to like that crew.
I agree. Joe Buck is great. I think he's great.
And the other guys, anyway. So, yeah, that's it. They go tonight. It's game three. It's and then they play games 3, 4, and 5 with whoever the host, the visiting team is now. They've flipped it around. And then there's an off day Monday. And then Tuesday, Wednesday of next week, game 6 and 7, if necessary. And that's your World Series update. By the way, kudos to Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who's a finalist for the Gold Glove for left fielders in the American League. He had only 3 outfield assists this year. So people are like, hey, how does he get the Gold Glove, nomination? I guess it's a nomination. He's a finalist. And the reason for that is quite simply, nobody's stupid enough to test his arm. Like once he threw those 3 guys out, it was like word got out very quickly. Because remember, this guy was a shortstop like a year and a half ago.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
He's learning this position. And he's going to be a real good one. And in fact, you know, I'm not sure left field is his position. I kind of wouldn't mind seeing what he looked like in center field. I wouldn't mind that at all. I think he's got good range. I just think that if you're a Gold Glover left fielder or you're a candidate to be a Gold Glover left fielder, man, wouldn't that strong arm be better in center? You're going into gaps. You want to keep runners from taking an extra base. This is very important in the development of the Blue Jays. I feel very important. That extra base. Okay, you let a guy get that extra base, then there's a wild pitch or an error, that guy comes out home. You know, you don't allow that extra base, first to second to third. It's very, very important. I'll bet you the Blue Jays lost, I don't know, 20 or 30 runs this year. Guys taking an extra base on their outfielders and then ended up scoring on a play where they wouldn't have from had it been one base further back. Hey, listen, John Lott, the great baseball writer. This back to back. I told you I was an Athletic supporter.
Yes.
I think I... think maybe you're going to do a podcast, Mike. We do a podcast called The Athletic Supporter, right? We're supporters of The Athletic. The whole idea of The Athletic, the great writers for The Athletic, the stories that they tell you, long form and otherwise.
Right, that's a great
title. But they're chipping away, though. They're chipping away at The Athletic here. I mean, Andrew Stoughton, who we loved as a baseball writer for the Blue Jays, was let go. I hate to use the word fired, but ever since Donald Trump made it like, no, you're fired, it's sort of a ubiquitous
thing. Well, it is. I think it's
contract not renewed.
Yeah, like they let him go. I think fired and let it go are kind of synonyms, aren't they?
I guess they are. In today's world, for sure they are. But John Lott, though, retired. Now, John Lott's 76 years old. So that makes sense. You know, you look and get tired. You can only cover so much. But I still don't believe. I believe if the situation were right, and they were willing to pay him. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know, John Lott. I don't.
Well, yeah, but you know, he's had some family.
It's a part-time role, John. We need your excellent writing and reporting. And he's an excellent photographer, too. We need those skills. He's so passionate about baseball. He's so good. And so I just feel that, you know, really? Like, that's it? You're retired? Come on. Like, The Athletic couldn't say, hey, John's going to write, like, you know, three articles a month for us or for some feature, a long-form feature. I find that to be a shame. And the fact that The Athletic only charges, like, 65 cents a month now or something, they keep...
Something like that. Yeah, it's a buck and something.
I told you, it was costing me a ton. I don't want to get into it too much there, but I just think if you no longer have these fine writers and you're only charging a buck and a half a month, well, what does that kind of say? Like, the quality is going down of your product, and therefore you're charging less for this watered-down product. It's a watered-down product.
Well, that's a big double blow especially for the Jays fans, man. To get to lose Stoughton and Lott.
But not just Jays, Mike, baseball fans. Baseball, right. I believe that more people that first started watching the Jays, whatever their background was, it was, you know, oh, the Jays. A lot of people become interested in baseball as a sport and the personalities and the issues surrounding it. I really do believe you can grow that. I know it's true with hockey. I know people that came from other countries that never knew anything about hockey and became obsessed with hockey. Once they learned, they just gobbled it up. They absorbed it like a sponge. So people do this with baseball, and some of the stuff that Lott and that Stoughton wrote for The Athletic was gold stuff that you can't get in the newspapers.
Also, an interesting thing about John Lott, kind of a throwback, because he's a print-only guy. Like, really, today we're used to the print guys showing up on sports radio here and there, and you can, you know, I don't even know what John Lott sounds like.
No, and that's just it. John Lott, I don't believe, I never heard him doing it. He was the journalism professor at Centennial College for like 100 years. Oh. Like 25 years.
Like, I know
he taught Lance Hornby.
Oh my God. Yeah. Lance's book is right. Hornby's
last year at Centennial College was like John Lott's first year as I don't know if he was head of the department there, but he was an instructor for sure.
So I know I had an exchange of John Lott.
The man's a journalist. He's a photojournalist, but he's not a video or audio journalist.
Great photos, though. If you want good exhibition stadium photos, nobody took better photos than John Lott of exhibition
stadium.
Anyway,
John, so now, John, if you hear this, yeah, we really, really thought your stuff was terrific. Oh, the other thing was that I was going to write something on Twitter because everybody else did. And I'll say it on the podcast. I just, you know, because sometimes what everybody just, I've noticed this a lot. That when people are retiring or have passed away or whatever, we eulogize that person, and we want to tag that person and let that person know how much we enjoyed their work, right?
Yes.
You've retired. Oh my, they've passed away. I just wanted to say that I watched, you know, Roberto Clemente play or Bob Gibson play. Right? These recollections, right? And it's happening so often now, Mike. It's like, you know, you hear the story of, unfortunately, your favorite sportscaster or sports writer or whatever is now not working there anymore for whatever reason. You feel bad. You want to say, hey, really enjoyed your work, right? And this doesn't happen in like rock and roll. You know what I mean? Like Kiss doesn't say, by the way, we're all retiring now and that's it for Kiss, so that you can say, oh, but if someone passes away or whatever.
Sometimes Rush, I think, artists, did a farewell tour.
But you know, I mean, I went to seven farewell tours. I saw every one of them. So the other one too is, never mind. Anyway, let's move on. The NHL announced that two big regular season events will not happen during the upcoming 2021 season. Even though it may start in 21, it's going to be known as the 2021 season because it should have started already, right? It's late October, NHL season should have started, but it just ended. So anyway, due to a need to get the entire season in, the league has canceled the NHL All-Star Weekend that was supposed to be held in Sunrise, Florida in late January, And that means no skills competition, no All-Star mini games, because you can't have the All-Star break 3 weeks into the season. That would just be wrong.
Right.
And the season, they hope, is going to start January 1st. And at this point, probably it's going to be an all-Canadian division, because if you're going to start January 1st, I'm not sure the borders are going to be open by then. And I don't think Canada's going to want this international try. Not at all. The league also canceled the Bridgestone Winter Classic, which was supposed to be played in Minnesota, I think. The Minnesota Wild and St. Louis Blues.
Yep.
Right. But that was supposed to be New Year's Day 2021, my birthday. And that's supposed to be when the regular season is to begin. And don't even get me started with the World Junior Hockey Championships, because normally it's Boxing Day. Like every Boxing Day, man, it's World Junior Hockey Championships. This year, I think it's going to be New Year's Day.
Huh.
I'm not sure. Nobody is.
You wonder, like, what does a week do? I don't even know.
I don't know. Okay. It's too far ahead, too. I can't plan. The league is under enormous pressure from sponsors, owners, to play a full 82-game season. And they want to get fans into the arenas in any way, shape, or form. We don't got to start with a couple hundred. Let's get people into arenas. That's going to be a challenge. Don't know if I want to go to an arena, an enclosed place. Don't know. Is there an anti-vaccine? It's a tough one. Anyway, if they start January 1st, Mike, it means the season will extend into the summer. Okay?
Right.
82 games. Now, remember, the NHL's got to deal with NBC. Okay? So the Stanley Cup playoffs have to end by Thursday, July the 22nd. Why, Mike? Why? Why Thursday, July 22nd? Why can't they go into August? The Olympic Games.
Right.
The 2020 Olympic Games, which were canceled, or postponed.
Right.
Begin July 23rd. Mm. And NBC is the host broadcaster, the Peacock, baby.
Right.
So that means no hockey. Oh, we're sorry. Oh, Stanley Cup final. Oops, can't happen. Sorry. We've got the Olympics, got the 100 meters.
Right.
So the NHL, do you think, like, should they say, well, let's make it a 65-game schedule or a 70-game schedule right now? But the idea of getting all 82 games and the playoffs in, what do you think?
Oh, man, I don't know. What I've learned through this whole thing is money seems to be the primary motivator in all of this stuff. So I'm sure if there's a will, there's a way. Like, they'll find a way to jam 82 games in there. I don't know how they're going to get bodies in the seats unless it's these states that have, like, Republican governors or something like that. Like, so Texas, I mean, Dallas is in Texas. But those kind of venues, you're not going to get, I don't think you'll have bodies in the seats in, Madison Square Gardens or anything like that, I don't think. And not up here, I don't think. What do you think?
I mean, would you go to an arena? If the anti-vaccine had been developed and tested, and I was reading like the other day that Otis the cat is here.
Hello, Otis.
Otis is here. He's up. And so, do you know the story of Otis? Like, do you know the whole story with this cat?
He's a rescue cat. Right. Tell us the story.
Here he is, right here. Oh, don't go on the keyboard, bud. Come on.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so this is Otis the cat. So this is a rescue cat from Tehran, Iran. Okay. He was a feral cat. He was a feral kitten, actually, probably about 6 weeks old, as I'm led to believe. And was rescued, got all of his shots. A friend of a friend who was a veterinarian brought him over. He is an outdoor cat. This is a rare occasion. He's rarely indoors. I mean, he spends the entire night outside. The cold weather doesn't bother him. I leave food out sometimes. Sometimes he comes in and graces me with his presence. And now he's just mooning around. And that's Otis. And let me tell you something.
Yeah.
He's a sports fan. He loves to sit and watch the games.
That's perfect for you.
He's watching me now do the show. Do you want to go outside?
That's the perfect cat for Hebsy.
Guy's a really good cat. Sorry to get off topic here.
That's okay.
Anyway, 82 games, man. They got to squeeze it in. Then you got the Olympics. And never mind the Olympics. Mike, you got the Olympics this July, next July. Don't know how many spectators, if, whatever. How do you get all the athletes there? Do you have enough testing, et cetera, et cetera? But they're determined to do that. But again, that's not till late July. And then a few months after that, you got the 2022 Winter Olympics.
Oh, right.
So you got two Olympic Games within like 6 months of each other.
Like the old days. That's how it was forever, man. That's how it always was, right? Back in the day.
No. Not within 6 months of each other. Well, remember, it's every 2 years for the Olympics. Yeah, but every 4 years for the winter, every 4 years for the summer.
But they only flipped that in the early 90s, right? Like prior, you know.
That's right, 92.
Yeah, so prior to that, which guys like us remember watching Olympics when they were always the same calendar year. So it's almost like, you know, that throwback.
Right. The last time they had both winter and summer the same year was 92. Barcelona in the summer. It was Albertville, France, right. In 92.
Right.
But anyway, that's Olympic stuff, man. That's Olympic stuff. Did you also notice that Mike Emmerich, the great Doc Emmerich, the fine play-by-play announcer, retired this week as well?
I did see that, of course. Yeah.
Did you notice how much better the tribute to Mike Emmerich was? Done by NBC, I'm going to assume, and others.
I know where you're going with
this. And what Sportsnet did for Bob Cole.
Right. I did notice that, yes.
And did you also get involved in the discussion about, well, Bob Cole should be on the Mount Rushmore of hockey announcers. And, of course, you've got others saying, well, Mike Emmerich should be on the Mount Rushmore of hockey announcers. And so, of course, Mike, we've had this discussion, the Mount Rushmore meaning – you know what? Meaning
the top
not
four,
not the greatest necessarily, not the four greatest with the most home runs in baseball or the numbers of but what?
I think it's the four greatest. I think that's what it is, right? The four greatest.
You do, eh?
Yeah.
So you're telling me that when Mount Rushmore was created, the four greatest presidents of the United States were...
Who's up there again? Abe Lincoln's up there. Who else is up there? Remind me. George Washington. Hold on. Washington's up there. Jefferson?
Hold it.
I'm three out of four already, and I haven't even...
Oh, hold it. Is that what you want with the four, with the greatest of all time you want? Well, I know some of them. Man, you should know these are four. You should know.
I think I do know them
all. The reason that they're there, the reason that they were put there. From there's a certain, okay, you know, like the founder. First of all, you have to have the founder.
Okay.
Well, the founder or whoever the first one
was. So George Washington was the first president.
Has to be on the Mount Rushmore.
Right, George Washington.
The father of it's got to be, even as much as you detest John A. McDonald, if you were to have a Mount Rushmore of Canadian, and this is back when it was, you know, back when it was invented, you would have said, well, John A. McDonald was the first. So the first is in. The first guy's in.
Sometimes, but not always. It's not a blanket
innovator,
rule.
The innovator, the first one to take that step, whatever, has got to be in on any Mount Rushmore. That's number one. After that, okay, it can be the next three greatest, whatever the case, however you want it to be. But in the case of Mount Rushmore, you're dealing with Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
Right. Declaration of Independence, et cetera.
Sure.
You're dealing with Abe Lincoln.
Sure.
Freed the slaves. And yeah. The fourth one, of course, is Mike.
Oh,
on Mount Rushmore.
Who is the fourth one? FDR.
Well, he
Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
No, it's the other one. Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, Teddy Roosevelt. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, very progressive. The most progressive to that point president. Okay.
All right. Yeah.
And so, okay. So to me, that's the Mount Rushmore. If you want to say, here's the four greatest NHL play-by-play guys ever, that's fine. But don't use the Mount Rushmore analogy because that's a difference. Just say, here's my top four.
Okay.
I'm okay with that. But don't give me this in the Mount Rushmore. It's like with these, like Eddie.
Who are your top four hockey play-by-play announcers of all time? All
right. Number one's Foster Hewitt. There's no discussion. He was the first play-by-play announcer really in any sport with any regularity. He invented it, and he also invented the phrase, he shoots, he scores, and he was an innovator, and he was known across the country, and he's number one.
Okay.
Now we're talking about radio play-by-play. TV play-by-play is a different story. It's different. So we have to give the number. There was no TV then. So he's the innovator. He's the numero uno. He invented play-by-play of hockey. Invented it.
Okay.
That's number one.
I'm with you.
Number two, to me, is Danny Gallivan, all right, who did Montreal Canadiens games. But outside of Southern Ontario, Montreal Canadiens games were seen in other parts of Canada and, of course, in Quebec. And so that's, and by the way, and I had met him and interviewed him. He was fantastic. He used words that no one had ever heard
but
before.
Sure, but most of us but most of people in Toronto did not hear him, right?
That's right. But his delivery was such that he was very, like, you couldn't dislike him. Well, you could because it sounded like he was a Habs fan. But the point is that he had a different style of broadcasting that was completely different from Foster or Bill Hewitt. It was different.
Well, Romanek will praise him as his inspiration. He would hear him in Peterborough, I think.
This is my Mount Rushmore. But he was an innovator in that he used language that was very different, very flowery language, very descriptive language, even though it was a television broadcast. So when you saw Serge Savard spin away from a guy, and as he was doing it, you heard the voice of Danny Gallivan going, and a Savardian spinorama. So he was improvising his in his play-by-play skills as Savard was improvising in his technique on the ice. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas Foster, who was much more straight ahead, you know, Pulford has the puck over to Armstrong on the left wing. Now he centers it. Keon scores.
That's pretty good, buddy. It's pretty good.
That's radio. That's radio. Okay. Television. Danny Gallivan didn't have to say, and now Savard spins away from so-and-so or whatever, right? Had he said a spinorama, the listening audience might have gone, what is he talking about? But the viewing audience can see what a lovely description of the move that Savard made. That, to me, makes a great broadcaster. He's in there. Okay. Number three, I listened to him, but I didn't know about him, was René Lecavalier, who was the French equivalent of Danny Gallivan. And remember, and we can't forget this, not just the great French-Canadian hockey players, but the culture in our country, okay? It's another language, man.
Sure.
Let me tell you, this guy, he had it. That's your compte. Are you kidding me? So kudos to him. He should be on it because this is Canada. And then the fourth one is Bob Cole. Because Bob Cole was spanned generations of hockey fans. And Bob Cole had a dramatic way of just, you know, you're compelled. If you heard his voice from the other room, you had to go in to hear what was going on, right? And I'm just leaving for a second to get a beer and you'd hear, Sidler, score! You just come running in. He would beat the crowd to the moment. Do you know what I'm saying? Cole had that. He beat them to it. He was right on top of things. That's my four.
That's a good. Well, I don't even have four. I would say there's two I love, and this is going to sound like a typical 40-something-year-old Leafs fan, but I love Bob Cole. And I love, don't laugh. I love Joe Bowen. I love Joe Bowen's radio call of Leaf games.
Why would I laugh?
I know you're his second.
I worked with Joe for 2 years, man. I loved sitting next to Joe. You couldn't get Joe. Listen. Joe was always into the game. There wasn't a second where Joe went. If something exciting was about to happen, didn't matter if it was a fight, a hit, of course, a goal, a moment. Joe could anticipate that moment. He knew when a fight was coming. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And right into the game. And that's what you want. That's what you want from a play-by-play guy. All right. Retired NHL player Todd Bertuzzi is sorry for the way he treated media members during his NHL career. Well, most media members. I was too hard. I told you guys, sorry if I was a douche, man, Bertuzzi said during a spot on Sportsnet 650's starting lineup in Vancouver with the great James Cebulski and the equally great Perry Solkowski.
I don't know Perry.
Perry Solkowski and Darren Detition used to work together on the anchor desk on ITV in Edmonton with their version of Sportsline. And I can't remember what it was called, and I apologize, because I had seen the show a few times when I was there. And these guys were really good together. They were a really good team. Perry's now in Vancouver, has been for years. But anyway, these two guys had a good morning show in Vancouver. So anyway, Bertuzzi's on the show, and he goes on to say, it's true. I wasn't very cooperative at times because I wasn't really ready for that stuff. I didn't want to speak every day to the media. I was paid to go play hockey and entertain fans, not to have stuff written in the paper. I could care less. I think he meant I couldn't care less. But he writes, I could care less what was written in the paper, the stories that you guys needed. I just wanted to go play hockey and entertain fans. That's all I wanted to do, end quote. But I'm going to add this. The apology was not extended to everyone because when asked, well, you know, about certain members of the media, this is his quote. Cox and Simmons are two donkeys that don't know anything, said Bertuzzi. I don't consider them sports writers.
Woo.
You see what I did there? I went to the Bertuzzi voice there. So that was a quote. I didn't have to say quote. I went, I don't consider them sports writers. They're complete cowards. They just write opinions without ever confronting me or looking me in the eye when I showed up.
Interesting.
End quote. Now that's rich, Mike. You say that you were a douche all those years to the media and you apologize, but you're still being a douche.
Right.
Right. By saying that if these guys would have confronted me or looked me in the eye, let me tell you, I interviewed Todd Bertuzzi a few times. You look this guy in the eye, he don't like you, you're dead. Okay, it's that look. That looks could kill. He would give you a stare like, don't even come near me. Don't even come near me. Now, remember, let's add to that. Already he had a reputation as not being a nice guy, being a douche. This was before he broke Steve Moore's neck. with the most cowardly cheap
shot. The worst.
Into the defenseless opponent. And then his apology was the most insincere. They forced him to make the apology. You remember that?
Of course, I remember this.
A cattle prod. Like, you got to make an apology. And it was like, if I hurt anybody's feelings, or it wasn't quite like that. But I mean, you know, it was just insincere. And now he's coming on to apologize years later. You know, sorry for being a guess what? It's way too late. Way too late. What, you're discovering yourself now that you were that kind of a guy? But at the same time, you're giving it to Damian Cox and Steve Simmons? Come on, man.
That was an ugly play. And I can't. Can you remind me? Was he arrested? He was arrested, right?
Yeah.
But
I think so.
Did the charges stick? I can't remember how that ended. I just remember.
I don't know.
I can't remember. I'll Google.
I just remember it was just very unsightly. Very.
Oh yeah. It wasn't a hockey play.
He was playing junior hockey for Guelph. His teammate was Jeff O'Neill, the O Dog. Their coach was Craig Hartsburg. Okay. I remember, you know, I went out there with a camera working. I was working at Global at the time and went to interview him. So we had asked for him. We had asked for Hartford and we had asked for Jeff O'Neill for interviews. And O'Neill was good. And I was good. And Hartsburg was good. And Bertuzzi was just ornery. Now, what's an 18-year-old, 17-year-old? What's he got to be ornery about?
Right.
Okay. With a camera and a crew from Toronto, you know, what? It was difficult. Okay, Mike, let's move on. I know a lot of people want to talk about this. Everybody's kind of weighing in on this. I decided that I didn't want to get into it in Twitter, the whole thing like that, because there are certain experiences that I have had working with females in sports journalism. Doing it for years.
Sure.
Not enough of them, though. Too many of them discouraged. I could tell you in one case, this is an article in The Athletic by Sean Fitzgerald. Anyway, why are there no women in sports radio?
Right.
I'm just going to say in sports journalism, there was a woman that I worked with who was very, very good, very talented. And the bosses where I worked at the time I even went to bat for her, but I mean, would not give her this. She's a woman. None of our viewers are going to want to watch this, you know, woman, listen to this woman and the sponsors and this whole thing. I just went, man, but she's really good. Anyway, she ended up terribly discouraged, leaving the business. And, you know, I thought of that too, because the way she was treated was just wrong. It was just, you know, the old boys club of, come on, really? And around this time, I was listening to who I thought was great. Mm-hmm. And I'd gotten some tape sent to me. Otis, what's up? You want to go out? Mike, can you fill in for it? Seriously, I'm sorry. I got to let the cat out. Five seconds.
Well, yeah, no problem here. Let me just tell the audience that just about a month ago, I had Michelle Storino in my backyard for a long-form deep dive discussion. So Toronto Mic'd, the episode of Michelle Storino, is a really good like backgrounder on what it was like for Michelle Storino in sports radio and why she's no longer pursuing her dream of being in sports radio. Hebsy returns.
Sorry about that. Cat wants to go out. It's a nice sunny day. He wants to go out. Yeah. And I heard part of that Michelle Storino interview. It was quite interesting. Anyway, this woman never got back into the business. And she was super talented. I can only imagine, you know, had she gotten an opportunity, she would have had her own show, guaranteed.
Wow.
Her own show. I'm going to say that somebody, one of the smart program directors at the time, would have scooped her up and put her in midday probably, I'm just going to say, to start with, or maybe overnight, who knows. But at the same time, I was listening to a woman named the Fabulous Sports Babe. Now, this is before she became really popular on ESPN and all that. She was working at a Seattle station. I'd heard the story. She had a football show. I was a Seahawks fan too, right? So I get these tapes or whatever, find out. Was there internet in those days? No, there was no internet. She worked for KJR in Seattle. Yeah, maybe she was. Maybe there was an internet.
What year
anyway,
are you talking?
I got some tape. I had heard she was really good. I mean, she was, but she was, she had, Mike, she had a shtick.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I listened.
She wasn't, she wasn't playing the part of, hi, I'm a woman here and I know my sports and, you know, I'm delivering it the way the men would deliver it. She was brash. She was cocky. She really knew her stuff. She would challenge callers. She knew her stuff. And Let me tell you. Mm-hmm. All right. It mattered not that she was a woman. She knew her stuff, but I liked listening to her because you never knew what to expect next. She had someone on the caller. She took a lot of calls from fans, right? This was, she wasn't like, you know, so much let's like nowadays, let's get in touch with the play-by-play guy for this or the writer for that or the team that follows the guy and those chummy type of conversations. She wanted like fans.
Right.
She wanted to hear fans. What do fans have to say? And then she'd cut them down. And but she was really good. The Fabulous Sports Babe. Her real name was Nancy Donnellan. But anyway, this is, I'm telling you, this was 1991. Anyway, I found out because I had interviewed her a couple of times that she, in 1981, she started working in sports radio in Tampa, in her hometown of Tampa. So 1981, she was like in her 30s. And I'm thinking, man, I'm thinking back in 1981, how many women, you know, had what it took or not had what it took. Had what it took to go to try to get a job in a predominantly male, profession. What it must have taken to get this gig, and how disrespected was she all those years? And you know, as that was going on, like I said, this other woman who I worked with for a time was just so frustrated. There was no chance of her getting this gig. And I think of people like Christy Blatchford, Allison Gordon, the great Debbie Van Kiekebelt. Trailblazers, you're going in there, you know, and you've got to, and people, all the guys are going to, same thing. This is what guys do. This is what I don't like about guys when it comes to sports, right? Any woman, in any situation, many guys will go, oh yeah, who won the 1954 World Series? Oh yeah, when was the last time? You know, like they start quizzing them. It's like from, if you ever saw the movie Diner, okay? This right. guy, he says he won't get married unless she can answer football questions. It's like, right? And when I saw that, I said, I can see that happening. Like dumb right. stuff like that, because that's the way guys are. That's the way guys are when it comes to women.
Right.
Right? You don't know. You never played. Like sort of that attitude, right? And so I imagine all, because I saw it happen, all of these women that I worked with and that I knew that were into sports would always get it the same from guys. I remember going to guys going, don't ask that. Like, don't do that. You're going to embarrass yourself. Oh, yeah, I bet you don't. And then, you know, she'd rattle off the entire roster of the Montreal Expos from 1981, including the salaries that every player made and his lifetime wore. Right? And these guys would just, with their mouths open. And now imagine if a guy had that knowledge of sports. Immediately elevated. Look at that. Like, fabulous. Right? And so I just, you know, Debbie Van Kiekebelt, man, she, you know, going to interview Reggie Jackson. He's thinking, oh, here comes this hot babe that's going to come over, like, you know, totally sexist. Hi, honey. Hi, sweetie. Stuff like that. And meanwhile, she's sticking him with tough questions. And his eyes are like bulging out of her head. Totally unexpected. Because up to that point, you know, it was like, oh, there's the token woman and she's going to have the softball questions. And even look, even on the telecast, like with the first, you know, the sideline reporters, like, okay, well, let women on television and sports, but they're all going to be sideline reporters.
Right.
Right. And after a while, you can believe me, I've done it. You can only ask so many questions as a sideline. You just, there's not much you can do. Right. There just isn't much. And so, okay, well, at least, you know, we let the, yeah. Okay. Guess what? Right. There's a lot of talented women who are better than that, you know, that, or, and some of them who don't want to ask the softball questions. They want to get right in there. So, man, it's a tough hurdle to climb. The Fabulous Sports Babe was amazing. Hannah Storm. I used to watch Hannah Storm on CNN. She anchored CNN Sports. She knows her stuff.
Yeah, with
but
like
Hannah Storm
Vince,
had been a sports fan for years. Her Vince, father was an owner, an ABA owner. She grew up, you know, a tom, however you want to say it, a tomboy. The same with Catherine Humphreys on City TV.
Right.
She grew up a tomboy, a sports fan, like from the beginning, in her DNA, her whole family. And there are so many women like that, so many women that grew up with brothers, fathers, whatever it was, sports. It was sports. They played sports. They loved sports. How can they not? How can you say a woman doesn't love sports as much as a man loves sports? Like, that's the dumbest thing.
Right.
And so it's more than high time. There's a lot of totally talented women. My only issue is this.
Yes.
And from the television side, is I think they still look at physical attractiveness for the television presenters. They still do. Nancy Donnellan, the Fabulous Sports Babe, was not an attractive woman. She was extremely obese. She had a voice like this, a truck driver, right? She had a shtick, though. That wasn't her. That was this character that she created, kind of like Bob McCowan. Created a character, an on-air persona. You know, short-tempered, grouchy, you know, but knew his stuff. And that was the bottom line, if you knew your stuff. And so I think nowadays, Mike, and I hate to say this, but I think nowadays, for a female to really advance, maybe she's got to be different from the other females. There's got to be something different, right? The same way with a man. Because, you know, how do you stand out in a crowd? Well, not just being a female, but have you got, I don't want to say having a shtick, but there's something more, you know, and that's not an easy thing to do. I'm not saying you reinvent yourself. What I'm saying is that perhaps to get the job that you want in sports broadcasting, and in this case, getting a show on the fan or getting your own show on TSN, right? There's got to be more of a reason for people to want to tune in and listen to you. And if you happen to be a television personality already, you've kind of lost that, not the edge, but the idea that I don't know what this person looks like. I'm listening to someone, but I don't know what they look like. And there's a certain appeal there, Mike. There still is.
I don't know if I agree so much because, Hebsy, right. like if you think about somebody like O-Dog, right, who's having some success on Toronto Sports Radio, like everyone knows what he looks like, right?
Well, everyone who watches.
Well, anyone who would be listening, anyone who would be listening to 1050 radio.
That's true.
Right. Okay. So I mean, I feel like.
But you're tuning in because you know he's a former NHL player who's a good storyteller.
What about Landsberg?
What about Landsberg?
Okay, but I don't think it matters if you, if you're a TV star first. I guess that's my point. Like, I don't think that matters.
No. What I'm saying, You misunderstand.
Let me hear it.
What I'm saying to you is if you're a female and you want to do a sports talk show, did you know what Ashley Docking looked like before she came into your studio?
Not if I hadn't done my homework.
All right. I'm just saying. To me, there's an appeal. Like, I'm trying to think what I was watching. Oh, I know. I was watching a soccer match yesterday. My team, actually, Tottenham Hotspur. And it was a singular announcer. There was no sidekick. Okay. Normally, there's two guys. And it's always two guys. It's another thing, too. There's not a female, even though there's a women's professional league that's doing very well, even though there's all the European teams have female squads as well. And then, of course, there's a Women's World Cup and women and soccer in the Olympics. Women, it still boggles my... Anyway, it's one guy, and I'm listening. I don't know who it is. They don't super his name. And I'm going, this guy's wonderful. He's wonderful. I don't know who he is. I don't know what he looks like. He could be a troll. But I loved hearing a voice of someone that I didn't know what they looked like. I had no, I just only following their voice. And sometimes if I'm watching a baseball game or a football game and I didn't see the introduction to the game and see the two announcers or three announcers standing there and I only hear the voice, I'm like, who's that? I didn't know who the moderator was last night in the Trump debate for a while. I'm like, who's that? She's good. I didn't know who she was. Kristen Weldon from NBC. I'm like, this is good. So sometimes when you hear something, and this is what I go back to. When you hear a voice and you go, oh, that voice is too high. Chris Cuthbert's voice, Geddy Lee's voice. When you first heard it, ooh. And then you realize after a while, it's got nothing to do with it, man. The content is terrific. It's wonderful.
Okay, so just to clarify, because I don't want any confusion out there, okay? But you're not suggesting that, like, to be on Toronto radio, it's better if nobody... are you suggesting it's better if no one knows what you look like? Is that what I'm hearing? Or maybe I'm completely missing this point, which is possible.
I think that would be... to me, if I'm a program director and I hear somebody that's really good, hear them, because they had to have worked in radio or done a podcast or something to that effect, but they haven't been on television. This person has not been on television. And I hear this fresh voice. And the reason I say it's fresh voice, because obviously no one's heard this voice. And, you know, I mean, except for the, you know, however many people heard this person before. And now you're going to elevate this person to a talk show, a talk show on radio, not on TV, not simulcast on TV with cameras there. That's how we see O-Dog. Because I got news for you, buddy. You think that everybody knows what O-Dog looks like. Mm-hmm. And I say that there's lots of people who listen on the radio and they don't. They don't watch him on television. They're listening to the radio on TSN 1050.
But he does those.
They're not necessarily watching James Duffy in the panel.
Okay.
So you labor under the misconception that everyone like you has seen all these shows on TSN, TSN2. Da, da, da. Hey, radio still, there's people that still listen to the radio or the podcast that maybe have cut the cord long time ago and don't watch television, Mike. They just don't watch all the panel shows. It's possible.
Okay, and again, your opinion, you're entitled to it. Of course, that's why people tune in to Hebsy on Sports, to hear Hebsy on Sports here. But I don't think it makes a difference. I mean, Joe Buck calling the game tonight, we all know, at least everyone watching the game tonight knows what Joe Buck looks like.
Mike, have you ever listened to Joe Buck on the radio before? On the radio?
No, I don't believe I have.
This is my point. You're getting off topic here. Okay. We're talking about sports radio shows. We're not talking about a woman sitting on a panel with other women just having a half hour discussion show like PTI or something. We're talking about a radio show, sports radio. I'm a host of a sports radio show. Hello, my name is so-and-so. Here I am. Not two women. I'm a woman.
Okay.
Is there somebody out there?
Well,
and if there is, why isn't Jeff McDonald? Why isn't, what's the other guy's name? I can't even think of it.
Dave Cadeau.
Why aren't they saying, you know what? We're not taking a chance here. We're taking someone that's really very, very good, and we're going to put them on the air. And there's going to be a buzz. There's going to be a buzz saying, who is this person?
What
an interesting voice. Well, that's an interesting concept that she has of the CFL. Oh, boy, that's very interesting. I like listening to this person. She has good guests on. I like her commentary. I tell you what, Mike, I'd be listening.
Okay.
And don't tell me that there isn't somebody out there. Don't tell me there isn't someone out there.
I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say the opposite, which is.
And that isn't afraid to express those opinions.
Okay. So to get a baseline here, okay. So TSN 1050 has Andy Petrillo. Okay.
Yes. She's on Leafs Lunch. She's been doing it for years.
Now, the Fan 590 recently had, as you just mentioned, the name Ashley Docking in mornings, and it did not last very long at all. And then she was.
Well, they bounced her around. Look, she was with Greg Brady for a while. They got Greg, you know, they did what they had to do with his contract. Yeah. However,
Scott
and they
MacArthur.
Said, okay, now we're going to put her with Scott MacArthur and Mike Zigomanis.
Right.
And apparently the story is that one of those three people that I just mentioned went to the boss and said, I can't work with somebody else in that group.
So where are the female voices on Toronto sports radio? If there's only one right now.
That's just it, Mike. That's just it. Okay. I mean, I listened to Jennifer Hedger yesterday and she's great. I listened to her. She took over for on Overdrive. Okay. But I was listening. I didn't see her on television. I didn't see what it looked like. Okay. So I'm only going from the audio standpoint, but I know what Jen Hedger looks like, but I also know that she's really good. So that's, you know what I mean? But had, for example, it been, a female that has been reading news or sports on 680 News.
Okay.
Let's say, and now she's got her own show on TSN 1050 or The Fan or whatever it is. And I've heard her voice before. I don't know what she looks like. And she's good. She's going on about Lourdes Gurriel Jr. And she's going on about how the NHL better get its act together again. And, you know, whatever, and other stuff. And like, okay, I like this. This is good. But if I know that she's works for TSN and has been on does shows there, does shows over there, it's not the same. It's not the same. Unless, again, I know she's really good.
That's because I find it fascinating because
the difference between being a presenter, Mike, sitting in front of a camera or standing in front of a camera and presenting the next story, the next item, the next topic of conversation in front of a camera, very different from sitting at a desk in a studio with nobody else, you and a microphone, okay? And being able to engage an audience, very, very different. And those who can do it, to me, are worth listening to, are compelling, right? And the other thing, I'm not going to say that, look, am I getting the best of this person? Is this person better on TV, presenting in front of television and throwing to highlights or whatever? Or is this person better interviewing, doing a good, solid, hard interview, getting somebody in there and asking like maybe some tough questions, coming up with some really controversial topics that maybe people don't want to discuss or maybe are afraid to ask certain questions. Maybe you'll get a little out there with an edge, something I haven't heard before. Yeah, that's who I want. That's why I started listening to McCowan. That's why he listened to Pete Franklin in Cleveland. Wild talk show host. That's why, Mike. That's why you're interested, and so are other people, in the goings-on with these individuals that you see on TV or hear on the radio. It's tabloid-type stuff. You want to know more. You hear them. You like them. You're interested in their story. And to me, if I know what the person looks like, it doesn't mean that they're not great on radio, too. You could be great on television and great on radio. You can be, absolutely.
Sure.
What I'm saying to you is that the ones that you only know first from television, the presenters, and you can figure out who they are. I don't have to tell you. The ones that probably didn't have radio experience, but they do have TV experience. They look good. They present well. That's a different type of broadcaster. Someone who grew up with radio, who started in radio, who radio was their first medium of communication, and then graduated to TV. That's very different. Very, very different. Hardest thing to do, hardest thing to me, to engage your audience, play by play. You're talking about, hey, like, I got to envision that people have got one ear on me all the time. They're listening to every single word that I'm saying. Whereas a TV guy can throw out a line and, you know, no one's really there. You know, their attention is divided. They're watching what's going on. They kind of hear it, but it's not the same. But if you're only listening, you're driving down the road and you're just listening, you know, every word and every intonation that that broadcaster is telling you, that has a big effect.
But you'll concur, of course, that the good is good. Like, yeah. Regardless of what they look like, or whether you know what they look like, or if they've been on TV, or if they were a reader on TV, that good is good. And we all like, everyone's just craving good.
Right. Right. So what I'm saying to you is that these program directors, the ones that are the decision makers, okay, because the Scott Moores didn't do it. Right. They didn't, you know, I'm telling you, the ones who you can talk all you want about diversity, but until the program directors, the decision makers say, let's get that person on because they're good. Let's get them on.
Right.
Not because they're female.
Because they're good.
Not because they're a person of color. Because they're good.
Sure.
Okay. And don't tell me that there aren't, and it doesn't matter what the background. Okay. White, black, whatever the religion is, your gender, anything like that. If you know your shit, okay, get that person on the air. Give me give me something fresh. But I don't like when people, like, I read a couple of things where someone was saying, well, why couldn't the Fan get a woman on in the afternoon? It got to be as good as the two guys who are on there now. See, I think that's unfair, okay? To start pointing fingers at white guys, for example, and saying, hey, you guys aren't that good. There's females out there that are better. That to me is unfair. It's not the fault of those people, right? It's the fault of the program director.
Oh yeah, no one's saying Ben Ennis should retire and say put a woman in my spot. Like, no one's suggesting that. It's a program director's responsibility.
But you know what I'm saying? What I'm telling you is there's professional jealousy no matter what. No matter what. Hey, that guy got the job. I should have had the job. He's not so good. Don't tell me it doesn't happen in sports radio. I know it does. You listen to someone and you go, look, the worst of that are musicians. A lot of musicians that I know,
yeah,
secretly, quietly, couldn't stand certain musicians. Were jealous of their, I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know how many people are jealous of, like, Nickelback? Like, oh, those, like, this, it's a whole, it's like a cottage industry almost.
Right.
And believe me, it happens in sports and it happens in journalism and it happens in every time somebody gets a job and is elevated, people go, oh, I'm better than that person, or so-and-so is better than that person, or why did they hire that person?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Always that, always been that.
So,
everything from nepotism to sexism to, you know, you name it, man.
So before we leave this topic, so are you of the opinion that Toronto sports radio should be more diverse than it is, be it gender or, race?
Yeah, yeah. But I definitely do. But again, and I add the caveat, I got to know who's been sending in their audition tapes, whatever. I need to, you know, I don't have a handle on who's been applying for these jobs. Or what do we go out to find this person? Do you do what they did with Jackie Redmond? What was that called? Let's find that diamond in the rough. Let's invite people to come out. I mean, was that not part of diversity? I would say for sure it was.
Interesting times, just because we've talked about what Michelle Storino had to say and how difficult, like, she found it. And then you can have an argument which maybe she wasn't good enough, because we want you to be good enough. And then we talk about Ashley Docking, who apparently was good enough. And then you have this inside information that's very interesting, but they did not, they didn't, I just find it interesting in 2020 that we can name the people, and really quick, I'll do it real quick, because Mary Ormsby is in my backyard next week with her husband, Paul Hunter. So this is happening next week. So Mary Ormsby.
Two excellent journalists.
Yes, and I can't wait to, and they're no longer at the Stars, so it'll be a great combo. Mary Ormsby, the fabulous sports babe was syndicated. I listened to it on The Fan, so it was syndicated.
But she had been on for years before that.
Sure, but
in
to,
local markets, not sure. National. But not. But imagine that at the time, Mike, to go national.
Right.
National.
Well, international.
A female sports talk show host national in the United States with like over 200 affiliates on Ray. Ridiculous.
Well, then you had Barb DiGiulio, right, who was on for
excellent
many co-host many years.
Of the afternoon show with Gord Stellick. Did she do a show by herself?
I don't think she ever did a show by herself. No, but she was.
But even so, as a co-host in a male dominated world, Barb knows her stuff and still doing a great job on the night side on News Talk 1010.
Correct.
It's not a sports show, but it's still a talk show. She's an excellent broadcaster.
And then you're at Ashley Dawking for the cup of coffee. She's been gone now for a while. So that's it.
She just got a gig at the College of Sports Media.
Oh, yeah. Good for her. Good.
Yeah. Okay. Crosswinds Golf and Country Club. look, the season's coming to a close soon, but before it does, go check out the colors, the beauty, the splendor of Crosswinds Golf. We were out there the other day, man. It was so, so nice trying to get in around this weekend. Don't know what the weather's going to be like. Crosswindsgolf.com. I think too, Mike, with all the restricted travel, the people who normally might get away to play golf during the winter here may not.
Right.
So it's even that much more important to get those rounds of golf in when you can.
You don't have a tee time for
really
today, do you? You don't have one for today. Because today's today's 20-something degrees.
Do you know why? Do you know why? They were booked well in advance.
I bet.
You can't get on anywhere.
You can't drop your name.
Anywhere, because you never know. Sometimes people drop out or somebody says, oh, look, there's a 40% chance of rain at 5 o'clock today. That's no good for us. You know, stuff like that. People do that. Check out Crosswinds. Like I say, season's coming to a close. They got lots of great specials in the pro shop there. And if you're looking to book a wedding or a banquet or a golf tournament next year or even the year after that, check them out. Go to their website, crosswindsgolf.com. The Zozo Championship is taking place at the Sherwood Country Club in Los Angeles. The defending champion is Tiger Woods. Luckily, there's no cut on the weekend for this tournament, because if there was, Tiger would be sitting in the clubhouse playing gin rummy and watching other golfers golf. The soon-to-be 45-year-old Tiger shot a 4-over par 76. He's tied for 75th place in a field of 77 golfers. That's embarrassing, man. You're the defending champ. Come on. I mean, horrible. He looked horrible. It's not like he'd never played there before. He's the defending champion.
He's not a young man anymore.
Although he didn't win it there last year. It wasn't at that course last year. It was in China, in Japan rather, but there's issues with COVID. Anyway, the leader is Sebastian Munoz. He fired an 8-under par 64. Have you ever heard of him before? He's never heard of you either.
I knew you'd say that.
Terrell Hatton is also there. I've never heard of him. He's never heard of you. He's tied for second with Justin Thomas at 7-under par. Top Canadian, Mackenzie Hughes. Mackenzie Hughes, 5-under 67. He's been playing awesome lately. Not eligible, though, for this year's Masters, because this year's Masters is still to come, the 2020 Masters. Normally it's in the spring. He wouldn't have qualified for the Masters, but he does qualify for the 2021 Masters, which hopefully will be played in April of 2021. That's Mackenzie Hughes from Dundas, Ontario. Corey Connors shot a 3-under par 69. He's from Listowel, Ontario, home of Letterkenny.
Right.
Been there. I've been to Listowel before, too.
Cool.
It's nice up there. Nick Taylor, from BC, is at 70. Adam Hadwin, also from BC, shot a 75, but birdied the final two holes to escape last place. He jumped ahead of Tiger. Next week, it's the Bermuda Championship, which I'm assuming is in Bermuda. I don't know how they're going to get there. International travel, golfers, do what they got to do. Followed by the Houston Open, and then the Masters from November 12th to 15th. Now, there's talk that some of these tournaments may include spectators. And so what's happened is a lot of golfers, like Dustin Johnson's like, he's got COVID. He's like, I wouldn't even think of it. So if you're a golfer, Mike, and now you know that instead of just the few people who have been quarantined or whatever, are the officials, marshals, whatever, now they're going to allow the general public Are you going to risk going, even though it's outdoors? Are you going to risk going to play golf in these events?
Oh, like everything else, we said money is a primary motivator. It all depends how much are you being compensated, how careful can you be, what's the real risk?
Can you put a price on it?
You're outdoors. You can keep.
You got a couple of young kids, and now they tell you we're going to allow 4,000 fans to come out.
But Hebsy, man,
you'll be social distancing, but still. Yeah.
But Hebsy, man, like I think about this with Halloween that's coming up soon. Like if I'm outdoors and
there's no Halloween this year, didn't you hear? They've canceled.
Well, that's
Halloween.
Not true. They didn't cancel Halloween.
Trick or treating. It's mandated now, isn't it? In certain jurisdictions, if you're caught trick or treating, what happens?
No, that's not true. It's the door to door that's gone, but we were always going to kill that anyways. The door to door is gone, but you can be creative and still do trick or treating. I mean, we're going to do it. I know. But if you're out, I've been living this way all summer. So if you're outdoors and you can keep 6 feet distance between you and people who aren't in your household or whatever, you're not going to, your risk is near zero, the risk of transmission, if you can keep 6 feet apart outdoors. So what's the difference if you're golfing and you can keep 6 feet from everybody outdoors?
Easily.
Sounds safe.
Easily.
Yeah.
But that means the crowd. But the thing is, the gallery is going to have to keep 6 feet away from each other. Think about this. So you're lining the green at 18, right? You know, up 6 feet, 6 feet. So how do you do that? Come on.
But that's not the golfer's problem.
It's not like you're going to an arena and that section there, it's every other row, or you've seen the way they have it gapped. Although in some, like I say, some events, everybody's like crowding together.
Sure.
Okay. In tennis, Milos Raonic, that was into the quarterfinals at the European Open, but is withdrawn with an abdominal strain. Does this sound familiar, Mike? Milos Raonic withdrawing from a match. Prior to its being played.
Heard that.
That's the 12th time in his career, 12th time that he's withdrawn before a match. And it's the second time that it's happened against Grigor Dimitrov. Mm. So I'm thinking that Milos has like a version of the Philadelphia flu when he plays Grigor Dimitrov. Now, I don't know, coincidental or not. It's like, Dimitrov, I think I'm going to withdraw here. I'm not feeling so good.
I don't know.
This is the one thing about Raonic, man. He's injured. Because he's going to go down in history as being injury prone.
Well, that's
this great. He's not getting any younger, Milos.
No, he's not getting younger. But I'm worried also about, of course, Bianca, who seems to be perpetually injured as well here. So,
well, they say that, and I hope it's true, that she's going to be ready for the Australian Open.
Oh, good news.
I think that's a tough comeback there. I mean, I know she played well, and certainly in that part of the world, that's a tough comeback. But if they're going to, if her team is going to release her, as it were, back into play after it'll be over a year of not playing any competitive tennis. 1 year with injuries. And she's 20, still 19. I don't know.
She's got to have aged at least 1 year since she's been. I guess she's got to be 20, but I'll have to Google that one.
Anyway, so we'll see what happens there. That's not for a while. Meanwhile, Felix Auger-Aliassime is into the quarterfinals at the ATP 250 tourney in Cologne, Germany. He's the number 5 seed there. He gets Yoshihito Nishioka of Japan in the quarters today. Nishioka has beaten Felix in both of their previous matches. So revenge for Felix. Revenge. Earlier this week, Denis Shapovalov, who's about the most up and down player. You don't know what you're going to get with this guy. He's either fantastic, pulling off these phenomenal shots, and then the next day he can't get the ball over the net on his serve. I mean, yesterday he loses in 3 sets to Gilles Simon. He looks like crap in the first set. He loses 6-1. He's double faulting all over the place. Comes back, breaks Simon in the second set, wins 6-4, and then falls apart like a cheap suit in the third set against Gilles Simon. Mike, you might be able to take Gilles Simon to 3 sets. I'm serious. Pretty disappointing stuff from a top 10 player. Am I putting too much pressure on Denis Shapovalov? He's only 21 or 22 now. Am I putting too much pressure on him? He's a top 10 player.
Shouldn't
a top 10 player beat a seeded player, beat an unseeded veteran like Gilles Simon? God.
You'd think so.
Shapo has been wildly inconsistent. You never know what you're going to get with this guy. Honest to God. NFL yesterday featured two terrible teams, the Giants and the Eagles. The G-men led 21-10 with 7 minutes to go, but Philly rallied late. Carson Wentz hit Boston Scott. That's a great name. It was a pass to Boston Scott for the touchdown. 18 yards to Boston Scott and the Eagles. If they can convert the extra point, we'll lead the Giants with 40 seconds to go. The Eagles. That's a radio call.
Eagles.
The TV call would have been, did you see that run? What a play.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Like, if you were listening to the audio of a television simulcast, that's what you would hear. You'd be sitting, what? What happened? What?
We got to get Boston Scott on the Patriots. So that's
Boston
where he belongs.
Scott. Beautiful. Like, there was a play. There was one play. I can't think of the Giants quarterback's name. He's running. He's running 85 yards. He's got 20 yards on the rest of the guys. He's going to score. And the announcer for the game is going, he's going to go all the way. Was it Tirico? He's going to go all the way. And then he stumbles. Like, inexplicably, he just stumbles.
Oh, right.
He stumbles and he falls. He ended up scoring, but it was like, oh my God, like that's terrible. It's awful. The Giants now fall to 1-6. Philadelphia is 2-4-1. 2-4-1. That's my favorite pizza place.
No, it's not.
2-4-1. Meanwhile, the Buffalo Bills at 4-2, leaders of the AFC East, get the 0-6 Jets on Sundays. Let's go, Buffalo. And finally, Mike.
Yes.
Finally, the L.A. mansion that Wayne Gretzky sold to Lenny Dykstra is back on the market.
Ooh.
With Gretzky asking 23 million shekels. Now, you may recall that Wayne built this 13,300 square foot mansion in Thousand Oaks, California, back in 2002. Had like everything, man. He sold it to Dykstra in 2007. For $18.5 million. So we don't know what it cost to have it built and the land and everything like that. But let's assume it was less than $18.5 million when he sold it to Dykstra in 2007.
Right.
Now, at the time, Lenny Dykstra was considered to be some sort of financial genius. Like, he was running, you know, flying all over the place on Learjets. He had this magazine, this glossy magazine, you know. Anyway, he didn't, of course, have that money. He filed for bankruptcy in 2009, and the bank foreclosed on the mansion soon after. The home was bought at a foreclosure auction in 2010. We don't know how much for. And then it hit the market again in 2018. And Gretzky going, wait a minute. I know that house.
Right.
I know what I sold it for. In 2007, I sold it for $18,500,000. And here it is for sale again.
Mm-hmm.
It's 11 years later. He gets it for $13.5 million.
Woo.
He gets it for $5 million less than he sold it.
Right.
11 years earlier. Okay. That's pretty smart.
Yeah.
Now, and that's 2018. Now it's 2020. He's selling it again 2 years later. So he buys it for $13.5 million. And 2 years later, he's asking $22.9 million.
Wow.
Man. So here's the house, six bedrooms. Okay. So Wayne and Janet had four kids, right? So each get their own bedroom. That's four bedrooms. Wayne and Janet's bedroom is probably a beauty mess. It's five. So the sixth bedroom would be a guest bedroom.
Yeah, like Cato Kalen or whatever.
Okay. Eight bathrooms. Eight. So everyone's got to have their own bathroom. That's six, two extra bathrooms. So that makes sense. Okay. And two guest houses. Oh, two guest houses.
That's for Cato, right?
As well, this mansion, this estate has a screening room, a gym, a game room, an office. Well, wow, an office. Could you be a little more descriptive, please? An office. Woo, let's go. That's mine. A championship tennis court.
Of course.
Which would be championship meaning full size, but also championship meaning maybe bleachers?
Oh, I don't know.
Like, what would championship tennis court mean versus just tennis court?
I don't know.
Maybe two courts? I don't know. Anyway, championship tennis court. So I'm interested now, a little outdoor entertainment area. Well,
of course.
That's pretty descriptive. You know, it's outdoors and we like to call it the entertainment area. Wood burning pizza oven.
Woo! I'm
sure that gets a lot of work. Wood and gas barbecues and formal gardens. I need to see more pictures. No basketball court, no ice rink, no roller rink, right? No golf putting green, no, but a tennis court.
For when Dustin drops by, you got to have the golf putting green.
I thought the same thing. The same thing. That's why he's got to move. That's why he's selling it for $22.9 million.
Right.
So anyway, he banks like over $9 million. If he gets what he's asking for, he makes like a cool $9 million on the sale from over 2 years ago.
Think about his real estate agent and those commission checks. That's amazing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I wonder if he, I wonder in cases like that, if it's like, I'll tell you what, I'll give you the listing, but I'm paying you 1%.
Well, that's, I don't know.
Go find me the buyer.
I don't know.
Anyway, that's it for episode 208 of Hebsy on Sports. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks as always to Toronto Mike for production and inspiration. Hit him up at Toronto Mike and listen to his terrific podcast. He's doing like 8 shows a week.
About 3 or 4.
It seems like 8 shows a week. Thanks also to our great sponsor, Crosswinds Golf and Country Club. Go to crosswindsgolf.com. Get in those last few whacks this fall. Go do it before the snow flies. And don't forget, Christmas is coming, and you'll want to get a great gift for your loved one. So why not purchase a copy of my book, The Greatest Athlete You've Never Heard Of? I'll personally sign and deliver your copy in plenty of time for Christmas. Hit me up at markhebsher@gmail.com.
This is a great idea. So, yeah, for anyone who's interested in a great story, this is the perfect Christmas gift or Hanukkah gift or any holiday gift, Winterfest gift. Perfect. Contact Hebsy Man directly.
Chrismica.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks, Mike. And thanks for allowing us into your headspace. Have a good one. Back with another exciting episode next week. Until then, so long for now. This podcast has been produced by TMDS and accelerated by Rome Phone. Rome Phone brings you the most reliable virtual phone service to run your business and protect your home number from unwanted calls. Visit romephone.ca to get started.